Transportation Committee will please come to order at 3 minutes after seven.
He's just saying that.
Members present, Representative Furnace, Representative Davis, Representative Maru, Representative Schultz, Representative Cato, Chairman. It's Wednesday, May the 8th, 1985, 7:02. I hope everybody wrote down the visitor's record. We should have them write down what bill they... Oh, I know which one bill you both wish to testify on. I think I'm right. And Representative Penalberry has just joined us. Well, Scott, you wish to testify. You don't want to testify on 21. You want to testify on... Yeah. The prime sponsor is here for HCR 21.
Why don't we wait? We'll do these guys first.
Well, Johnny Binkley isn't here.
Okay.
But shall we wait till you finish eating your roll? The rolls are courtesy of Christopher. He baked all night long. All the people much you better have. Evidently, somebody's been bugging him about it.
Under who? Is that me? Marco, this committee is voting for HB 58, is that right?
Yes, he has.
I will vote for the croissant bill. We're down time this morning. She needs one of these.
You notice he left the chairman out. He knows that no way I'm going to regain the 20 pounds. This morning, then, we will take up bill HCR 21. Which is a relating to the standard architecture and engineering design by Representative Davis. Representative Maru and Jenkins are co-sponsoring this. Representative Davis, would you like to testify? You may do so right from where you are.
Sure, let me get a cup of coffee.
Okay.
Pardon me. This bill reminds me of a parable that I read once about saving the best for the last, you know,
right.
The best wine.
The copy of
would you like to talk about the bills that are in the Oil and Gas Committee?
That's another parable.
You have in your packet some, or you should, a position paper from the DOT and a possible language change on 27, which I haven't had any problems with. I did some head house research to look at some of the design work, at some standardization that's happened in public works. And I had a cast of all-stars for this, but because of the teleconference, or lack of teleconference, they couldn't be here. So I really am, doesn't matter if we want to take this up again or in next year or what, but it's been an interest of mine because of the number of buildings built in Fairbanks that are, everyone had their own design, and there's a tremendous amount of money spent on having individually designed buildings. In days gone by, when the BIA built schools, I don't know if any of you spent any time in the bush. I'm not necessarily advocating a strict standardization of design, but the BIA had the same boiler, the same generators, the same building essentially in every village in Western Alaska. You could walk into a BIA building, you wouldn't know that you were any place. You could be in Tulaksac or Akiachak, or there, every building was essentially the same. So and one of your pieces of information here talks about some of the cost savings. Let me make one other point. On back when SOS was running all the schools in Alaska, they'd send out maintenance people, and they knew how to work on the equipment. Now every school district has new different boilers. It's just a real chaotic mess out there. There's a real duplication of parts. You know, there's just, you know, it's a mess. Anyway, so it's not a real it's a complicated issue, but I just think that the Department of Transportation, which has some statutory directives anyway to work for a standardized design. That doesn't mean everything has to be identical, and that was the concern of DOT in their position paper. And that's why it came to this some of those proposed changes. But let me see if I can find in your packet where the cost savings are. Rather than try to dig them up, in 1982 they figured that the design costs were around $1 million in DOT, and I haven't talked to DOT to find out where they came up with that $1 million figure. And they figure with a standardized design they could save up to $500,000. In 83 they spent about $4 million in design costs, and they could save half of that, $2 million. In 84 they spent $2.5 million, which is approximately $1.26 million could have been saved. But I think there's other savings that could be accrued to the state of Alaska in terms of just having a more standardized design not only design but pieces of equipment. Like I said, I don't know if someone from DOT going to talk about that.
Yes, Mr. Okay. Rasmussen's here.
Well, those are my opening remarks, and like I said, I think it's something the committee should at least be thinking about and talking to the Department of Transportation about. But it's not something I don't need to have this document pass both houses and become law. That's not my intent. My intent is to let the department know, and it's something we need to be working on in terms of giving directive to the department that we think we ought to have standardized design. I'd be glad to answer any questions that the committee members might have.
Representative Schultz?
Yeah. It's in a resolution form. I honestly would like to see not only DOT, but I'd like to even see some plans drawn up in the department. I'd like to see it become a bill, a statute. I really would, because if you take a look at the ACS housing that's built around the state, that was all standardized. And, it didn't make any difference, like you were talking about. It was the same kinds of homes. The schools were designed the same way. They had the same kinds of furnaces. Today, when you start going in, one of the reasons we got this big M&O cost in the rural areas, and I'm sure that it's even in Anchorage in the schools, as they build onto these schools, they've changed. You can see right before they've stopped, if when you walk in the school, from one construction project to the next, there's a whole different system of heating and everything else. And so the maintenance man, I can take Delta. I think in the last 15 years, I believe that school's been added on to about six or seven times. And you can see it. I mean, as you pull up the school, you can see this section over here is the old section, and it added on. And as you go through that school and you start opening doors and looking at furnaces and things of that nature, they're none of them are related. But they are tied into one another, and some of it's pneumatic, some of it is old Lennox furnaces, some of them are, you name it, they've got them installed. It really creates some monumental problems as far as maintenance is concerned. I'd like to see a standardized design. There's no reason why, I'm just carrying off into education here, but there's no reason why you can't take in rural Alaska and design a school for 50 students, and that would be the design. Come up with two or three designs that could be acceptable and build that kind of a school.
Well, perhaps they'll be talking about that. I mean, there has been some effort at standardization of design.
There has been some effort.
It's not as if it hasn't, and I'm not saying that it's total chaos as far as what DOT is doing, and they'll probably just speak to that. But there's been some problems to it, as Richard just said. Some of the problems, obviously, are out of our control. We have local control of schools now, so they're doing their own thing, so to speak. So perhaps we could give some directives to those people, but the local control could prevent some of that from happening. But anyway, any other questions? Oh, excuse me, you're the
no.
boss here.
Representative Furness?
Just just want to share that several years ago, in the school system, and realizing it needed to build four or five new elementary schools, they went to a prototype design, and the intent was to cut out on architecture and engineering costs. And what they basically did is use the same building, but a different footprint, and same design, whatever, but a little different layout there. And it works. I notice here they speak of different terrain and seismic and sort of different things. I think they're closing their mind in because I've seen it work, and they're still using that prototype in Anchorage. We have soil condition that goes from A to Z. It's a good idea.
You go to Bettles or to Northwood, you'll find the same kind of ACS housing that was built. Identical. It was maybe a little interior different.
Representative Maru?
I'd just like to echo what Representative Davis has said, and also add that in my experience as an engineer and as a real estate broker, that if you do standardize, as Representative Schultz has alluded to, if you do standardize on heating systems and instrumentation systems and so forth, not only do you save when you buy, but you save on the operation and maintenance. People don't have to learn a new system all over again. And the second thing is that in terms of real estate, as Representative Furness has alluded to, anything that is above the ground, it doesn't make any difference what it is. It can be totally standard above the foundation. The foundation is what takes care of the different terrains and the different soils and different climatic conditions. And once you get a good foundation, and you can have nine different kinds of foundations and the same type of building, still save a lot of money. You can have the same building all over the state with different foundations. And also, I don't know if Mr. Rasmussen is going to speak to this, but
yes.
But there is information here on how many of the same types of buildings you've built, all with apparently a different architect, and we could have perhaps standardized them.
Yes, I can remember this problem very well. When I was working on PTA many years ago, we were having the same problem in the state that I lived in, and we asked them to go, it was particularly in school buildings, to standardize various things, and they did do so. And again, like Representative Furness says, it is a program that does work as far as heating and various things go. Mr. Rasmussen, would you like to come testify, please? Bet you thought we'd never get to you.
No, that's okay. No, thank you very much.
After listening to the novice, it's not a person.
Thank you very much. Obviously, the DOT is very supportive of these kind of things, and I think we recognize the real value of standardizing many, many things. One of the problems would always exist when you talk about these things is some of the negative things come out and maybe you get the wrong image of what we really are trying to do in our standard sections. Those things that the DOT controls themselves, I think we've done a really excellent job of trying to standardize lots of things. The prime example is obviously that we repeat lots of things lots of different times, guardrail on highways. You can end up with so many different types of guardrail, it'll drive your maintenance people crazy. Ketchikan, I remember going down there 5, 6, 7 years ago when we had 6 different types of guardrail in the area of Ketchikan alone. So obviously we've standardized some of those things. So some of the things that DOT controls and actually has under our own jurisdiction, we've done a lot of things to standardize lights on runways. Some of the bigger things that we've done are things like our own ferry terminals, both the type that we've built in the water, the facilities that are in the water. We've taken was saying a minute ago, we've taken a very basic design and modified that as it needed to be, that footprint idea, time and time again. Cape, Metlakatla, Huna were some of the original ones, and now we've pretty well spread that design throughout Southeast. Same with the terminal buildings. Those terminal buildings, we have two different types, one for a large one and one for a small one. Those are the type of things that we can and do, in fact, control ourselves. That they're projects for DOT, and we've tried to do this. We've also tried to use the system a little bit that Walt was mentioning earlier, too, trying to use a standard architecture or a standard architect to repeat the same thing. Once in a while, we have problems with selection processes to make sure we use the same one. Some of the things we mentioned in the position paper, and I hope when we try to illustrate some of the things that we have concerns about, that it doesn't come out negative, because that's not our purpose. It would be make our life much easier if we could standardize lots of things for lots of different reasons. But we do have some problems once in a while, and for instance, knowing what the long-term commitment or program is, and one of the reasons we went back and looked at what we've done in 5 and 6 years ago was to see what kind of things we had done, to see if there was anything else that we could have standardized. obviously some, there's, and I think several of you have alluded it to, we've had lots of local controls. Now, particularly in schools, at one time we did a lot of SOS schools, particularly when we were doing the Molly Hoos High Schools. There, I don't think we did as good a job of standardizing as we could have, because it was a real crash program. We had lots of different architects working and lots of different building programs at the time. And I'm sure that some of you that were in the House and Senate remember those days, that it was rather hectic to get those schools built and out. Another problem that we face with doing this standardization is two things that haven't been mentioned, and I think we need to think about it. And I keep mentioning some of the bad things, and I don't want to be negative, but you have to have a constant upgrading of those particular facilities so that you keep them up to codes. Two things that come to mind right away would be handicap access, which has been a big concern lately, and you need to adapt any standardized plans for those kind of things. And another one, obviously, that was came about in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years is asbestos. Those kind of things are just to illustrate that you got to keep those plans up to date, and you do have to have some kind of a system that upgrades and keeps those plans up to date. I'm not sure how we would react to trying to put a standard plan together for schools. I remember several years ago when we were in the throes of doing schools, we discussed and were even trying to implement very rudimentarily the very idea that you were talking about, where we would have, say, a notebook and school district would come in and pick or choose their schools. We never quite got a front of the power curve of getting those things put together before the schools were turned over to the local, the construction was turned over to local school districts. But we had at least investigated the cost of doing those things, what it cost to do a standard plan, where the money would come from. In other words, when you build a standard plan, you have to have some type of money to go out and build, put the standard plan together without a client. And under these constraints we're working out lately now, we just don't have an extreme amount of money to go out and spend $40,000-$50,000 to put some prototype schools or something like that together, unless we had some kind of a mandate.
However, Mr. Rasmus, if this were several years ago, you wouldn't have had any problem with money.
That's probably true, and we probably would have been in a little different position. That's true.
I would like to ask you a question.
Sure.
And that is, approximately how much does DOT have to do with the buildings of schools?
Very little now.
They actually do not do the construction work or the design or
any part
of that anymore. It's all under DOE.
Yes, and even that is very
local,
little.
They
do it with the local school districts.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I've been through the building of couple of high schools.
Mm-hmm.
And however, another question I would like to ask, which strikes me as one of the things that Representative Davis and Representative Schultz have both been talking about, and that is that I do know that DOT and I argue with them quite frequently on road equipment, things like that. For a while they were taking lowest bid and using standardized equipment in places where it did not fit, such mm-hmm. as on the Dalton Highway and various places like that. We got them to change that so that they would use the equipment that fit irrespective of low bid. But I was wondering why in the buildings that we build through DOT, if they could not do a standardized furnace type situation, standardized plumbing type situation, which I would think would, those two things alone would cut down maintenance costs and other costs. And you surely wouldn't have to have a prototype built for something like that, would you?
No. In fact, if you look at the little list of things that we have put together, one of them is trooper housing, or housing. It might be for fishing game, or it might be for troopers. And we've built a few of those. And those are standardized with standard facilities in them, standard floor plan. The furnaces and those things are all standard in those. I guess we're only up to 3 or 4 of them, but we have built those standard.
Representative Davis.
Well, I guess I have a question on you talked, first of all, you talked about the fact that you have been looking at the standardization and what it would take to do the standardization. Do you have some sort of internal documents that you've generated within DOT that would, you know, be of help to us as far as taking a look at what we've done, what the department's done so far, and what
the things that we have done so far.
And what
they're really concrete are things that, for instance, standard drawings for highways. Now, we have not gone out and built standard or looked at building standards for schools or anything like that.
I might ask another question to read through.
No,
go ahead, please.
I guess if I could be It may not be contained within this resolution, but do you have any recommendations on what we could do to give some directives to all these school districts? I mean, there is, they all have their own building supervisors and maintenance people and people that do their buying for them and all that sort of thing. But it seems like we could give some kind of strong directive to those people. They're receiving a lot of state money out there, and I'm not saying we have to. We could give them a manual saying, this is what's being used all over the state. These are some things that DOT has developed that which are going to save you a lot of money. You know, you don't have to go out and get your own architect in Anchorage, because here's some things that have been laid out before. Or go get your architect in Anchorage, but these are ones that are being used. So we could, the DOT or DOE, I'm not saying necessarily within your department, mm-hmm. could provide some assistance which could be cost savings to the district and to the state of Alaska. That's maybe is a more of a statement than a question, but if you have a response, I'd appreciate it.
I'll respond. Obviously, something like that would be very helpful. You could use it as a more of a clearinghouse, and one of the ideas might be, rather than try to, the ideal thing would be to set up a somewhere where you could fund something and they would have a whole series of plans and then they could dish them out. And that's not realistic in the budget constraints we're under now. But you may have a clearinghouse in which you might set up somebody where most of the schools that have already out there send in their plans, and that other schools could look at those. You might try something like that. Have a clearinghouse where they're through osmosis, there would finally be some real good standardization, because the other schools would look at the things that have worked real well. For instance, furnaces is a prime example of some of the furnaces we've put in the Bush schools have been extremely complex. And oh yeah, I know. I was looking right at it. Long furnace.
Yeah.
The furnaces are
a common example, did you say?
Common example, right.
We had the example before us, but
yeah, right. It's not common. Okay. Well, the furnaces, obviously, we put in some very complex systems in the Bush schools that didn't work very well. And other ones that have been very simplistic have worked very well. And that's the type of thing. So a clearinghouse idea may be an idea that we wanted to look at. In other words, those schools that are already operating, give us their as-belts and have some places that's a good clearinghouse. Might be in DOE, where the other school districts could draw on those sets of plans. That's basically the way we have developed our standardizations. The ferry terminals, for example, we've had a fairly good design that worked, and we've repeated it or modified it as needed and done that. So that would be a good idea.
Well, we were talking about budget constraints.
Yes.
And I won't go into what program and planning does in DOT, but I do know that you're heavily loaded in that area with people, and I've often wondered why they couldn't, even with budget constraints, do a little bit more research and work on something like this. Representative Schultz had a question. Representative Davis?
Yeah, Madam Chairman, you just hit my sore spot. We just, Fairbanks planning and research just got devastated. They don't have a lot of money. We're trying to restore that right now, but I mean, I just had to.
There is one area that I failed to mention that we have done in the billing area that since he mentioned research, it reminded me, and that is that we have tried to build some energy standards, irrespective of what the footprint building looked like, that should be met, and wind loads for small schools, and both of those are two things that came out of our research section. In other words, giving the designers a better feeling for what wind loads and snow loads should be on small schools and energy. Yes, because that's a horrendous difference in the state, you know, of what those snow loads and wind loads are, and to try to give the designers a better handle on that. So we've developed that, and we've developed energy standards for small schools. Now, both of those are research projects that DOT did that have no direct relationship to any of the projects we are doing for Department of Transportation, but strictly for the use of the school districts.
All right, Representative Maru, you had a question, then Representative Finalberry.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I've got two or three questions for Mr. Rasmussen. Actually, I was waiting for Representative Davis to talk about the ferry terminal at Fairbanks, but he didn't get into that.
I could if you like. Later.
Mr. Rasmussen, you've got a note here from apparently your Ron Wilson on facility types and frequency, and I was waiting for you to get into that and notice that apparently in the last 3 years there have been 8 storage buildings built by DOTPF, 5 mm-hmm. way stations, 5 something housing.
It's like state trooper or housing.
Four marine terminal buildings, 4 mm-hmm. correctional facilities. It's seems to me that eight storage buildings in 3 years are certainly susceptible of standard designs.
Sure. And the way that's done is we actually put out a little schematic for those particular buildings, and then the contractors literally finish up the design because they are the shelf-type buildings. In other words, they're a metal building, and rather than specify one specific metal building where there are several suppliers and the price may vary and those kind of things, that's the way we have been. So there are, I kind of hate to use the term, but they're a little bit quasi-design build. We give them a very basic schematic of what we need, and the contractors fill them in and use a standard building, and they are very standard.
Madam Chairman, one other thing, well, two other things, actually. One is I noticed that the second most frequent type of building that you folks have built have been weigh stations, 5 and 3 years, and yet the weigh station that I'm most acquainted with is the one in Sterling. And the joke used to be in that vicinity that if you really wanted to build a super deluxe gold-plated weigh station, how much would it cost? And people would say, I don't know, $50,000, $75,000, $100,000. And the answer is $1,100,000. That's what it costs the state. Now, why in God's name did we spend that much money on the weigh station?
I'm not really sure that one cost $1 million. I do know that there was some standardization in those weigh stations, and that they, it's no consolation here, but they are federal aid participating. I hate to use that because that's not a reason to look at the costs. I'm sure that the building itself didn't cost $1 million. I'm sure that the whole facility system, where we had to do some design and for the roadways and parking lots and scales and that type of stuff. I do remember those being very expensive, the 5 or 6, or the 4 or 5 that we built.
I don't know.
One other question. You mentioned handicapped people.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, when people say handicap, what they really mean is wheelchair, because there's so many different kinds of handicapped people, and every time you see a sign that has to do with handicapped people, it's got a wheelchair on it. So what they really mean is wheelchair. When they talk about handicap, they mean ramps for the wheelchair, and they mean wide doors, and you go into the bathroom, and there's a great big place so they can wheel their wheelchair in. I've spoken on the floor several times about the hypocrisy of government. We in the Barron's building, we have a man who works there. He has a wheelchair. That's a government that's not owned by the government, but it's leased by the government. There are no ramps there. This guy has to take his wheelchair up the steps to get in, okay, and down the steps to get out. He does quite all right, you know. But the point is that the government talks all about helping handicap, and in the room, the building where this guy works, there are no ramps or anything, and he does do without it. And the post office in Homer, they built a post office about 5 years ago. They didn't have any ramps. So some guy filed suit, so they built a ramp. Then it turned out that the ramp is underneath the edge of the eaves of the building. All the snow fell on the ramp. So then they built the ramp out of the roof out about 15 feet to cover the ramp. That was fine until a guy came along with a cane, and the ramp is made out of grating, and his cane tip went through the grating. So he filed suit, so they covered the grating with wood. That was last summer. About 2 months after that, they announced they were going to build a new building in another part of town. It's a comedy of errors of how government screws around and wastes money. My money. Okay? On top of all this, now that I got your attention, on top of all this, neither I, nor my wife, nor my friends, nor anybody I know has ever seen a wheelchair anywhere near the post office. There just aren't any wheelchairs, to my knowledge, at Homer. Nobody uses a wheelchair. The whole reason for the thing doesn't even exist. There just aren't any wheelchairs in Homer. Or if there are, I haven't seen any. Nobody else I know has ever seen any. There just aren't any. So we have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to take care of a problem that literally does not exist.
Yeah, I have obviously some so supposedly worse examples than that.
We're straying a little bit away from the subject.
Madam Chairman, I suggest that this is part of the subject, because if we build for wheelchairs, and there aren't any wheelchairs, we're spending money that we don't need to spend.
I couldn't help but agree with that to some extent. However, there's always a possibility of that one wheelchair, and that one wheelchair makes all the difference in the world. Representative Schultz?
Yeah, but to follow that just a little bit, I do believe that when it comes to some designing some of this stuff, that you don't need to be providing the access for wheelchairs. I give an example. That Delta went through $1.2 million, went through an entire upgrade. The school started in 1952, and in the history of the school, there has never been a student in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Okay. Now then, if there is a student that comes into that school and requires, then I would suggest they get off their duffs and make everything accessible. But I don't see spending $1 million in case someone does come up there with a wheelchair.
I went through all this one time in a committee meeting having to do with handicap, and what we came to the conclusion of was that new buildings, it was just as cheap to put in the barrier-proof the situation as it was not to. However, old buildings to be remodeled cost an extensive amount of money. And I can understand very readily that we don't have a highly populated wheelchair population. It's again, the same thing that we do much of the time, preventive maintenance, which sometimes pays off and sometimes doesn't. Representative Davis, you had another question?
Well, Madam Chairman, I could spend a lot. I'd love to discuss all these topics forever, but I'd like to propose that I work on I'd like to do another Be It Resolved, and perhaps you could help me with that on doing something that would create more work for DOT. You know, do something that would say that the state of Alaska should work as a clearinghouse or something to that effect. I'd like to work on that perhaps. Do we have another meeting tomorrow?
Yes.
And
tomorrow will probably be our last meeting if things go according to plan.
Well, I'd rather not move this out today, Madam Chairman. I'd rather work on that, be it resolved, and bring it back to you. But the other thing is, Representative Ruin, I spent 2 years down to the Barron's building myself, and I think there is no reason that I know Bill, and I think he's pretty athletic, and I think he goes down those stairs because he could take the elevator, go down, and go right out on street level. So I think that's the reason why there's no ramp there, is because he could go out on street level on the first floor. I think that's the reason.
Even with street level, he's got that tremendous incline uphill.
Well, it depends on where he's going. He may be going downhill. Yeah, so
he actually goes down the stairs with his wheelchair.
And I've seen him. I worked in there for 2 years. But what I'm saying is he doesn't have to go up the stairs to go to work. He can go in at street level and take the elevator.
All right, let's go through the chair, please, rather than conversation across the table.
Okay, but thank you, Madam Chairman, for the opportunity to discuss it.
Representative Penalver, you have one question before we wrap this up.
Well, this has been such a love-in on HCF 21. I just want to bring in a minority viewpoint, if I may, and it had to do with the position paper from DOT. And I'm reminded of that old saw that, you know, he wouldn't say sugar if he had a mouthful. Because as I read the position paper, it's clear that the problems that you see with this architectural standardization far outweigh the benefits that would accrue. And although you haven't come out and said, this point means X amount of dollars and this point means X, it's clear that the minuses outweigh the pluses as this is presented. At least that certainly is the way I read it, because you spend the first two paragraphs talking about the beneficial aspect, and the rest of the paper is talking about the problems, and there's just a lot more information in here about the problems. So I just want to make sure that it's on the record that I don't think the information the DOT has provided supports this resolution, even though you open up with the sentence that we support the concept, and you got all these buts, and the buts far outweigh the positive statement.
I've often wondered why you various agencies support a concept and then have a thousand reasons why they don't support the bill itself. And it's, to me, a little incongruous that this sort of thing happens. According to Representative Davis's wish, then, we will file resolution number 21 and have him go ahead and work on it a little bit more. And if we don't get another opportunity to hear it this year, then there won't be any resentment on anyone's part.
Just don't say file. It sounds so.
Oh, excuse me.
So deathwishy, you know.
We shall.
13.
We shall keep it on hand and have you work on it with DOT.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen.
Thank you very much.
Representative Binkley has not arrived. However, Mary Beth Hilburn is here, and perhaps she'd like to testify on the bill for Representative Binkley. And we also have Scott Burgess from the Alaska Municipal League to testify.
Thank you. Representative Binkley had another meeting. I'm Mary Beth Hilburn. House Bill 376 clarifies the statutory authority of local municipalities to regulate entry into the business of taxicabs, limousines, or other vehicles for hire. It allows the municipality to license, control, and regulate taxis, fix and establish and change rates charged for the service. Currently, the municipalities do not have this specific authority. Section 29.48.035A2 states that a municipality may regulate the following: licensing of drivers of taxicabs for hire, automobiles, motor buses, or other vehicles for the transportation of passengers or baggage not inconsistent with AS 2801010. Presently, about one half of the states have laws which regulate entry or fares, or both. Those that have not passed specific legislation feel that court decisions have granted the local municipalities the right to regulate the industry. Recently, March 27, 1985, the Supreme Court expanded the scope of immunity, thereby increasing the likelihood that municipal regulation of taxicab rates and entry will be found to be lawful. The Local Government Antitrust Act of 1984 did grant municipalities exemption from damage suit under antitrust laws, however, it did not give them injunctive relief. According to the International Taxicab Association, about 88% of all communities having taxicabs control entry. Of the 12% which do not control entry, half have never controlled entry and currently have 10 or fewer taxicabs operating in their cities. Municipalities may develop a ceiling or floor to the rate set. They may also set population ratio standards for entry, such as one cab per 1,000 population or whatever is appropriate given local conditions. That's the end of my statement. I'm here to answer any questions I can.
Representative Mulberry.
Madam Chairman, I wish I had known this bill was coming up because having some experience as a consultant to taxi cab companies, it's a subject that interests me. I'm wondering what the motivation is for the bill, because I'm not going to be able to read this material right now. And I don't know if it's in there, but maybe you could tell us why we need this.
Well, I believe that currently we just do not. One of the AG's opinions says that this clarifies the present law, and I get exactly what he has to say on that. The proposed legislation would not change the existing municipal exemption from antitrust liability as regards taxicab regulation. It does, however. Anyway, he felt that it did clarify somewhat. Okay, here's this broad grant of authority would seem to cover all aspects of the taxicab industry. House Bill 376 does not appear to either add or to subtract from this authority, although it sets out the authority somewhat more cogently than present law.
Well, I have to wonder why we need it, if it's really not doing anything.
Well, I think that, not my deal, but I think that what it does is it the current law does not say anything about regulating entry or setting fares. It just sort of gives a broad authority, and this actually states what the taxi cab, what the local municipalities can do.
Representative Ferns, did you have a question?
No, scope,
just,
I guess.
Maybe a comment, Madam Chairman. I know this has been a local issue in my community, and I've been somewhat perplexed by it. My gut instinct says that we, as a state or as a legislative body, should not have anything to do with setting fares, but that's a free enterprise business and they ought to be able to set their own fares in line with present competition. And just from first blush with this and birth with this, I'm against us setting, given municipalities an ability of setting taxicab fares. That industry can handle itself. If they set it too high, they don't get any riders.
Through the chair to Representative Grant. I believe that the problem in Anchorage has been price fixing, in which two taxi cab companies got together in a public place twice and were seen, and then after that, prices on the cab fares were fixed. Once I think that situation was addressed, I think that Yellow Cab has set a lower taxi cab fare and has now caused the other cabs to not fix their prices and to get some competition. Yellow Cabs have definitely set a competitive problem situation. One of the things that you might understand is that developing a ceiling or a floor to the fares would not keep the cab companies from raising or lowering the fares, or would just blow the ceiling.
Yeah, Representative Rue.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I note that in the packet is a letter from the Federal Trade Commission to Assemblyman John Wood in Anchorage, dated February 11th of this year. And I see that here they made a study, 176-page report done by the Federal Trade Commission, and they concluded that no persuasive economic rationale exists for restrictions on the total number of taxi cabs. Such restrictions waste resources, harm consumers, and impose a disproportionate burden on low-income people. Seattle has thus far rejected proposals to reestablish such regulations. Other cities that have benefited from reform of taxi cab regulations to permit more entry include Milwaukee and Madison, Wisconsin, Jacksonville, Florida, Spokane, Washington, San Diego, Oakland, Berkeley, Sacramento, California, and Phoenix and Tucson, Arizona. Restricted entry taxi cabs affects most those consumers who are most dependent on cabs for transportation and the procurement of necessities. In other words, the handicapped, the poor, and the elderly.
Does it affect them positively or negatively?
Negatively.
Freer
entry into the taxicab business, consistent with maintenance of safe and competent service, will benefit Anchorage residents and visitors by reducing waiting times for taxis, fostering fare discounting, and creating employment opportunities. And therefore, I have the same question that my colleagues have. Why do we need this? I mean, if the evidence is so preponderantly in favor of permitting freer entry into the taxicab business, why does Representative Binkley even introduce the thing?
I think that what you see here is that Representative Binkley has gone out of his way to provide as both sides of the question. And we do have from the International Taxicab Association lots of materials that state just the opposite, whenever they have deregulated taxis completely, there have been increased crime among taxicab drivers, this kind of thing. So we're trying to present both sides of it so that the discussion can go on.
Representative Penalberry.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I want to applaud Representative Binkley's and Mary Beth's efforts to provide both sides of an issue that I'm not sure the issue is clearly stated. However, if we're going to do anything that affects the taxicab industry, I think it will be it is of great importance to the two largest cities in the state, and unless I was to have testimony from the taxi cab operators in Anchorage and Fairbanks, I would not want to even consider a bill until we had testimony from Anchorage and Fairbanks.
I would like to at this time hear Scott Burgess of the Alaska Municipal League. I think he can enlighten us to some extent as to how the municipalities feel about this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Scott Burgess of the Alaska Municipal League. Case Halley versus Eau Claire that Mary Beth referred to in March of this year did clarify for the first time since the Boulder case, which sort of threw the whole issue muddied the issue in terms of municipal regulation under state law, whether in fact they enjoy the same exemptions. The state has enjoyed since 1932 in the Parker versus Brown case, that in fact, as long as a municipality has a grant of authority, statutory authority to a municipality to regulate, then they may regulate, and that it doesn't have to be overly supervised because in fact they operate as arms of the state. So we support that in terms of the clarification. My understanding is that that there are regulation of cabs for hire, vehicles for hire in the representatives district, as well as the municipality of Anchorage. In terms of the specific problems that this may raise, I'm not aware of those, but
Mr. Burgess,
to the issues.
One thing that I have a little problem on the rate situation. However, most municipalities at the present time have an entry type situation. I know in Valdez that the city regulates how many cab companies can be in town, this sort of thing, how many can enter into that for hire situation. Is this true in other municipalities?
I'm not sure. I haven't had
a
chance.
Is it a local option?
Yes, it's usually whether a municipality wants to do that or not. It is an option. My understanding is that in Anchorage, they do have a limited number of permits for cabs. I'm not sure in Bethel, I think that there is too. So I think it's both rates and entry.
Representative Maru?
Madam Chairman, this is already being done. You're quite right. I don't see any sense for the legislation just from that point of view. The cities are regulating it. My hometown of Homer has for years regulated the number of taxi cabs. They issue permits. They're considering deregulation now. They're very seriously considering deregulation, but in fact, for years, they have been regulating the number of taxi cabs. So has Anchorage, so has Valdez, and so, well, Fairbanks has been deregulated for 3 years, I guess, but before that, they issued permits, and this just simply isn't needed. People can do it under the existing law, and have been doing it under the existing law for years.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
There have been lots of regulation, which I think the legislature, in granting, you know, under Title 29 certain regulatory powers, assumed that in fact municipalities would regulate, and in fact municipalities have been regulating across the country with that assumption. But there has been, in recent court cases, starting with the 1982 case in Boulder, some muddiness to whether that in fact is being done with the supervision or clear intent by law. And I think what Representative Binkley has done here is to try and clarify on the most recent case, the Halley case, to write legislation that clearly indicates that that authority exists. And it's not a question of whether they've done it in the past, it's a question of whether it's clear in law that they have the authority to do that.
I see. So I do see some reason for this legislation. Representative Pinalberry?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Has the Municipal League talked to the taxi cab operators around the state? Just maybe through their eyes, they see an issue here that that the local government would not see.
We may pass it out.
I'd like to just excuse me, but I need to talk on with some people that I think we need to talk to. Go late for it. I'll talk to you later.
We'll probably hold it.
Madam Chair, respond to Representative Milbury. We do not have a strong position on this bill. We do have one that asks for federal as well as state clarification, and in fact, that there are many of those authorities given to municipalities to regulate, powers given to municipalities, that the intention is that they may regulate, whether it's for utilities or cabs or whatever the issue is, and that's what we're supporting, that the law be made clear that in fact that authority is intended. And as far as the specifics of taxi cabs, we'd be glad to participate. You know, there was some talk of a teleconference, certainly to get the taxi cabs in here. I know that, in fact, in other communities, there are taxi cab companies that do favor this, that don't favor this, and I think we should have that testimony. I'm not...
I'm inclined to agree. The reason we did not have a teleconference was the time restraint that we have at the present time. Inasmuch as if... really won't hurt, I don't, and I think Representative Binkley would agree with us, if we did not pass this out at this time, but kept it so at such time that we could have a teleconference and could have the testimony that is necessary from the individuals concerned along with the municipalities.
Sure,
so the chair would entertain a motion that we hold this in committee until such time.
So moved.
Representative Pinalberry has moved that we hold the bill in committee until such time as we can get testimony on it. I see the point of it being introduced.
I'm going to send a copy of this file to the text operators.
Were there any objections to this? No objections, so ordered. Is there any further business come before the committee? If not, then the committee will adjourn at 7:55.
Can you...